Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I am coming at you from a location that is not Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I am in the middle of the state, still in Florida, very close to a wonderful attraction you all know and love. I am in Disney Springs, and I have two guests with me here. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. First, on my left, that would be you.
My name is John Dubinsky, owner of the Maven Group. Great to be here, Marvin.
And on my right?
Mike Wise here, fresh out of Denver, owner of Clockwork Networks. Thanks for having us.
Well, guys, thanks for coming in Florida. And, of course, more thanks for letting me know you're in Florida and inviting me to come and hang out with you. So that's what it's really all about.
When you're this close to the bee, you got to feel the magic.
That's right. That's right. So, of course, we are here not really doing anything special. No real tech involved meeting here. We are just here hanging out, having fun. Apparently, Mr. Dubinsky, you do this all the time.
I do this all the time. Not normally with my tech buddies, but we've been trying to make this an annual thing with our little group. And anytime we can get down here and have a little fun and unwind from the stresses of our tech businesses and share some tech notes, it's a good thing to do.
All right. And this time, Mike, you were invited to the trip. How did that happen?
We couldn't find anybody else. We couldn't find anybody else.
Pretty much a happy circumstance, and I was happy to be part of.
All right. So if you were looking on the Facebook last night, you saw a stream that I did. We were at the top. What was that place that we were at?
It's Bay Lake Tower.
Okay. So we were up there, had a nice little adult beverage up there, and then I streamed a little bit of the fireworks show, which is a must-see if you come to the Disney area. So that is something that I recommend to everybody. And definitely, if you can get to the top of one of the towers, that would be the way to do it. You can see all of Disney World while you're up there. See the castle, see Epcot, and basically the fireworks are going from multiple locations. It is a pleasant sight. So, let's see. Why don't we do this? Anything that I missed, because I came to the party late. So what else happened on this trip?
No, really, this trip is all about unwinding. So we spent a lot of time. This is a little bit more about our project. So, you know, the great thing is it's just a relaxing conversation about what we do, but mingled in with a lot of fun. So
I think I'm going to take us down this path for one of the topics of the show is, you know, what is it that people do to step away from their business from time to time? John, you mentioned that you come down here and do this, just basically, you know, get away from not just your office, but just out of your environment, to where you're not having to think about things. Mike, what do you normally do to get away from your business?
I think one of the things that I like to do is I don't step away 100%, but when I do have time, I think about I spend my time in exploratory ways about, I try to think about my way business in ways that I don't normally do. I try to get out of the day-to-day. It's not exactly answering your question, but how do I step out of the day-to-day? I try to think bigger and differently about my business. And I try to step out of the grind, and I'll include my tech friends in conversation about maybe direction or focus.
All right. So stepping out of the technical side, but getting back and doing the overview as a business owner, hey, what do I need to do differently for my business to grow or to solve a problem, something like that. Exactly. Sounds good. Dubinsky, do you have any other tips along?
Yeah, I'll add on to that a little bit. You know, so just about everything I do, my business, you know, since I'm a techie at heart, is even when I'm relaxing, you know, I still wrap around a lot of what I do in the tech aspect. So a good example of that is, you know, I might be sitting on a deck somewhere or enjoying the sun, you know, when I'm not actively engaged in something else. And you know, I'll be playing on my phone, maybe looking for a new podcast app or trying to discover new shows, whether they're tech-related or not. Or maybe I'm digesting or listening to a book. So I got a couple of recommendations on that I can toss out. Right. because I was I'm lucky enough to have been on vacation last weekend with my family and now down here this weekend with the fellas. So I've had a little bit of time. So maybe some of these, and I'll put these in the show notes for Marvin, but the Freakonomics podcast, if anybody's ever listened to that, that's a very interesting show. There's another show called Deep Work. I'm going to go slow here in case somebody wants to take notes. There's the 5 a.m. Miracle podcast. Another one is called Never Split the Difference. And the final one is called the Productivity Podcast. So, you know, those are all neat things you can jump on. The other thing that I found is I found a YouTube channel that I like, and this is especially helpful if you're a G Suite user or a Google person, or if you use Trello. There's a YouTube channel called Simpletivity, run by a guy by the name of Scott Friesen, and he has a ton of short videos that are very helpful on, you know, to-do lists, productivity, enjoying less stress, getting more done. So that channel is very interesting.
All right. Wow. Just brought your Sunday Live material to the pro show, didn't you?
Yeah, I try. No show this Sunday, so I got to get my tips.
Yeah, I guess rolling over wouldn't be a good idea because that'd be half the show next week.
Roger that.
So you mentioned something that I'm going to be doing a future show, which is a collection of interviews that I took at a reunion that I went to last weekend. And it's funny because it's not a tech related event at all. It is an event that I attended 25 years ago, was my last attendance. And it was a Junior Achievement National Conference. And the people that actually put this together were all staff members from that conference. The conference is long gone. It hasn't happened since 1996. But all of us basically had a bond that has transcended the conference. I'll obviously do all of the explaining of what this conference is, but it was basically 1 week a year, but it felt like we were all lifelong friends. And, you know, being able to go back and just simply pick up where we left off was refreshing. It was something that reinvigorated my mind as to what I'm doing as I was trying to explain things. You know, hey, here's how my life has been. Here's what my business is doing. And getting feedback from people who are not in the industry, didn't know anything, and that was refreshing. So I just wanted to mention that when you talked about, you know, getting away a couple of times. And, you know, Mike, you mentioned, you know, yes, you step away from the business, but you try to keep a business aspect to it. I was able to keep a business aspect, but from a non-tech perspective of people telling me how great of things that I did. Of course, I had a couple of like, what are you talking about? I don't understand. Why would you do that? Why can't computers be so much simpler? So it was pretty good. So that will be a future show where I'll talk about that type of thing. So we had started to do a couple of things earlier that I just wanted to bring back up. Even though we were here hanging out, trying to just relax, topics still came up that we were asking each other questions. Hey, what'd you think about this? Or what did you think about that? So from the perspective of a community, and we have the TechCon Unplugged conference coming up in September, being able to be here and ask questions face-to-face, tell me your guys' perspective on that.
One of the things that John brought up was his thoughts on moving forward to protect clients, finding options that does not have a UTM without a firewall. And of course, I'm jokingly saying, are you crazy? And the joke is throw that out on a forum, maybe on Facebook or something else. And you can expect a lot of, are you crazy? But when you're in, you're on a trip with your tech friends and stuff, you can actually have the opportunity to scratch your head and take these non-traditional approaches seriously and have a conversation about it.
Yeah, and I'll engage in that and say, you know, the conversation is what would that look like without having it go from 0 to 10, I think is what you brought up, Mike. you know, just what would that look like? So if we didn't have a UTM, what would we need to do to, you know, key points of being able to identify what's going on at a client, being able to protect the client, being able to do the detection that a UTM provides, being able to respond if there's a problem. You know, because more and more we're getting mobile devices and we're getting mobile platforms that probably a significant amount of the time are not behind our UTM. So what's that going to look like? And do we need to have both without sacrificing the layers of security? So yeah, that's a great point you bring that up, Mike. That is essentially the huge benefit of doing something like TechCon or doing like this getaway, is that, you know, you can have those long-term or long conversations without diving into a confrontation of standards or stuff like that, and just kind of explore what might happen.
Well, I can tell you, one of my saved posts from the Facebook is a prime example of that, where somebody had mentioned that they were going to do a network install day at their office, and they actually put up a picture of the devices they were using. Half of the post were blasting the person. Why would you use that? What's wrong with you? I mean, and it's that anonymity of the Facebook, where you just say whatever you want without repercussions. And, you know, a couple of people defended him and, you know, responded back, but for the most part, it goes unchecked, which annoys me. But being able to be here in an environment where we can talk and ask questions, and like you guys said, not be ridiculed, not be attacked. Basically, this is what community really should be about, you know? So we're going to work hard on keeping this community spirit alive, especially the Podnuts community. And folks, if you're wondering about who the Podnuts community is, if you're listening to this, you are part of the Podnuts community. I don't care if you're in just a Facebook group, if you're in ASCII, ITBOG, the 20, whatever. If you are listening to this, you are part of this community, and we hope that you are doing what we're trying to do: help each other out, protect ourselves, and, you know, help us keep the industry going, make our businesses work better so we can make more money and live happy lives. Does that sound good?
That sounds absolutely correct. And the idea is to accept that there's more than one way to do things the right way. Now, there's several more ways to do things incorrectly too, but just because somebody has chosen one brand over another or has a configuration different than yours does not mean they're wrong. So I guess it's more about acceptance, exploration, finding a better way to do things, making sure that you're not making a mistake, getting validation from those that either know more or less than you. Because a lot of times, I'll classify myself as an old timer. You know, a noob might have experiences with things that I've never heard used. So, you know, everybody brings something to the table in what they've experienced. So that's the idea of community.
So the other thing I was going to mention is not every situation is the same. You know, even though we have talked about standardizing our stack, every customer is not the same. So I'm going to guess that the customers that you have in Michigan, John, are not the same as the customers that, Mike, you have in Colorado.
Sure.
Do you guys ever actually talk about that and compare customers, compare networks?
We get pretty in detail on a lot of things. You know, I don't have any accounting customers. Mike has a few accounting customers. I know you guys both have lawyers, which I do not have anymore. I do a ton of orthodontic. So I have some client stuff that we talk about there. So the great thing is that we can bring our experiences from different verticals to each other. It goes both ways. There's always differences based on what the customer is willing to do financially, what they're required to do by law, what you may have to do to meet compliance or provide that information, or maybe simply that you don't have a customer that's cooperative and won't do that for whatever reason that is. So, you know, the great thing is the discussions to have about that, you know, fitting all those pieces together while still building our standards,
right,
while still, you know, maintaining the customer and still protecting ourselves as well.
Right.
And also when we talk about what stacks we're using, there may be what I consider a core stack, maybe like a handful of vendors and products that I try to incorporate in any client, like say an RMM, for example. Maybe that same RMM is going to go across any kind of client that I have. But I may have other core vendors, say it was like maybe say 3-4 categories. But then you have clients that you may have inherited something unique to them, not unique to their vertical, but just to them. They save data to their endpoints, maybe. And they have a need for that endpoint backup. And maybe that need goes as far as restoring from an image. And this is something that might be unique to them. Certainly may not be part of your core stack, but this has taken a... Now, in order to support them in a way that's important to them, I have to now be an expert in and how to backup, do image backups of workstations, which may not apply to the lion's share of other clients. And this is not part of my core stack, but yeah, that's just one example of how you have uniqueness to some other clients. You try to make sure it doesn't break your business, you don't feel like you're running multiple businesses. Try to keep it all managed. And so there's the discussion of, well, what's your stack? And you just talk about everything, anything that you run, that's not really a good picture where you'd say, well, this is my core stack, but I also have experience in this.
Well, and even within the core stack, maybe it's not standardized. You may use a particular vendor, but maybe different models or different solutions from that vendor based on different client needs. So it's even hard to do that, where it would be great if we could standardize and say, you know, this UTM, all my clients, no matter what. No, that doesn't work that way. So it does make things difficult for us to, I don't even know how you say, you know, keep the stack, keep the core stack with, you know, the little spoke wheels off.
Well, you know, that comes to managing your growth as well, because if you have a ton of disparate systems, you know, I'll pick on Mike's example. He has a client where he has the image backup every one of those systems. And so let's say Mike adds 10 more customers with the same type of need, but perhaps somehow every customer doesn't use the same image and backup software. So now, Mike is mastering 10 programs, which, you know, for a solo tech might be difficult to do that. So now maybe you have staff needs to spread that that technology stack across the knowledge base. So, you know, if you're going to try to manage your growth as a solo tech or a small business, you know, standardization helps versus having to bring on more knowledge base to support that. Or since you're a part of a community, you can definitely reach out to people in the community that might be using that stack that you're running into.
So the question I was going to ask when you talked about growing the business and you have one customer that has to do endpoint imaging, then you get a second or third. Now, some vendors you can maybe consolidate and change them all to the same platform.
Now you're talking about the perfect world fantasy. That's where we all, I think, like to be.
Listen, I live here in Florida, so I think like this all the time.
Well, yes, definitely. If you can, make that stack unique to you and implement the same stack at as many possible clients as you can, as long as it meets their needs. Mike, you brought up a great conversation about your three things that you should pick up when you're considering a product. But if it fits those three things that all that Mike talked about, and you can push it out to all your customers to manage it, I mean, that's a perfect way to do it. Then you can manage more endpoints, more customers with less time and make more money.
Okay, so Mike, you're on the spot now. What are these three things?
Well, when you're evaluating a vendor and evaluating a solution, I think about and how much I care about. Also, one category is I call best in class. Another and definition of that is this in your mind? How far ahead of it is the rest of the pack in terms of it doing what it says it does? And then another category is how popular is it? And when I think about that, it's like if I need to reach out to a trusted tech friend, is this something that
other people are using?
Or if I take on a client, what's the likelihood that they already have this? right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of the third one.
Well, he's showing that the example of that middle one when we were talking about were NAS devices, where if you have a Synology NAS, I mean, it's extremely popular
right.
in all the communities versus maybe a, well, I don't think Lenovo.
Netgear Ready NAS or
yeah, something like that, where those are going to be one.
I remember. Thank you.
You remember after that?
Forgive me a moment. And the other one is how easy it is, especially for solo tech, to support.
Right.
And so those three.
Okay. So best in class, popularity, and ease of support. We're going to write those down and expect everybody to know that by the time we get to Michigan.
There will be a quiz.
Yeah.
Possibly a giveaway.
Now, we're going to take a left turn here. Best in class, because that's probably the one that people would argue about the most, because best in class, between the three of us, we're three different opinions when it comes to let's use the old popular one that I always get slapped on the wrist for, firewalls, UTMs. I don't even know what you use, Mike. What do you use as your UTM?
I use Calyptics primarily.
Okay.
I do have a
All right. John?
I'm still a Calyptics guy.
Oh, you're still a Calyptics. Okay.
Yep.
So I will say this. I have a Calyptics box sitting on a table next to my desk. If you're listening, Calyptics, I will get that installed soon. And I will have a whole explanation about that. But I'm still SonicWall.
And, I think that's a great left turn question, because I think based on the category, you possibly have several class leaders in a category. But then if you drop things down to, like, let's pick on backup, I would probably say if somebody said, who's the industry leader in the backup solution that we use for our size organizations, probably the first one that comes to mind is Data, and the solutions they provide.
Well, and they would fall in the category of popular as well.
Correct. Whereas, we have a great partner in MagnusVox or whatever other solutions you might be using. Those might not be the leaders in the class, but they might fall under the easy category as far as getting started with low overhead and ease of use, maybe community involvement. So, those are the type of considerations, I think. But yeah, I think you hit a funny point or a sharp point when you talk about firewalls. There seems to be a lot of angst, mm-hmm. or a lot of discussion, or are those discussions that go from 0 to 10 when somebody tries to start defending their firewall over
right.
another firewall. So, and, I also think there's a lot of discussion to be had there, a great honest discussion about the power of a SonicWall versus a WatchGuard versus a Calyptics versus, how do you get the relogs off those devices? How is the ease of setup? What features they have for managing multiple boxes at the same time? And the other fear I have with a lot of those boxes is the questions I have is like the total cost of ownership of those boxes from our point of view, meaning, does it cost me to run their control panel? Do I have an annual fee to run the control panel to manage cluster
right.
boxes? Is that included? Are they doing my config backup for me? Am I doing my own? That's the power, to roll it back to your initial comments about the community. That's where the power of the community is.
Right.
Because if we all use different boxes and we can have an honest conversation about them and say, ooh, your box doesn't do that, but you're not an idiot for using it, versus my box does, and that makes me better, we can have community discussions to determine and make all of our businesses better, and not to mention our lives less stressful and easier.
So one of the ways that I avoid those discussions is that it doesn't matter whether I like it better or not. It matters if it works for my client and does what they need. And that's how I've always based my decisions on. Now, of course, I want to like it.
Sure.
And I want to be able to support it the easiest way possible. But I also want to make sure that it works. And it works every single time. Now, I do not believe in 100% uptime that people keep trying to say that they can do. But the products that I use on a regular basis are products that I don't have to worry about supporting. I don't have to worry about failure. And I don't have to worry about, a big old Facebook discussion because one day they all crapped out at the same time.
Well, I think they're just, you know, the three of us down here, we talk about that all the time. Four, including you, obviously, but the three of us are a long way from our home-based businesses. So we have to have the confidence in what we have installed that, you know, I don't need to be able to reboot a router because it's not a very good device or a firewall. And so my customers aren't down. So the, what I'm installing is has a very low percentage of failure.
Low percentage of failure and high level support behind the scenes. So here's what I like. Most of my stuff, and I can't say that everything is this way, but one of the reasons I pick some of my devices and stuff is because they'll have 24-hour support. That's a big thing for me. Only because I have attorneys that work 24 hours. So they'll be working on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday. And if something hiccups, they're going to reach out to me and want me to fix it. And if I can't, I want to be able to call somebody 24/7 to get that support. That is a reason where Datto has really shined for me. That is a situation where I'm trying to remember the last time I did have that happen with SonicWall, but it was so long ago, I can't remember what it was.
And when you say Datto, you are talking to their BDR solution?
Yes.
Right.
And mainly it's for me when the backups are running. Most of the backups, I do have backups that run during the day, but for the most part, the big backups are running at 8, 9, 10 at night. And if I get a failure notification, I don't want to wait till the next day to get it fixed. So, you know, even if I'm at home, I'm making sure that I get those alerts. So if a backup fails, you know, and backups fail for so many reasons, not that they're Datto's fault, it might be the server's fault, but I need to know that somebody can go in there and help me fix it. And that's one of the reasons that I have pushed to stay with Datto. And there's probably other great solutions that are available 24/7. I just haven't gotten to the point where I've researched those, but I'm sure that I will need to just in case.
And that's a category of when that goes sideways. You have an extreme situation where you begin a restore and you need that kind of guidance if it's just not, it's going sideways on you. That's a different category. And that's now in that kind of category, it may be very different from, say, you're a new, you know, a Wi-Fi AP installation,
right,
and you have been to choose from, say, if you don't already have something tried through and you're looking at something like Ubiquiti, where you know there is a community that uses it. And you may be unsure of, if you need to pick up the phone and call support, what to really expect.
Right.
Right. Versus, and then you might think, well, but if something does go sideways with that, chances are it's just not as critical. I mean, it could be, but by and large, you may have different priorities, what I'm saying, for your different vendors,
right,
and different technologies with regards to how important is it that you get, that 24/7 support on the phone when you have a question.
Right. John, I was really sitting here expecting you to just be ready.
Well, I got a lot on my mind there. I am ready, but you know, I'm just two comments that you made, you know, on the stacks that we choose, that we have, you know, being solopreneurs, most of us are having at least somebody that we can call and back us up. But you know, as we were running through our tool stack, I was thinking, and I'm just considering my stack that I use too, but you know, I'm staring down at my phone sitting at the table and, you know, the notification would pop up because I monitor everything I do so that I can have that visibility. Then I'm thinking, how many problems can I solve from my cell phone before I need to fire up my PC? And then from that point is, how many problems can I solve from my PC before I need to roll my truck somewhere, call somebody else to actually go on site? So the idea when a problem happens is to minimize or figure out how you could minimize either through automation, starting with minimizing that truck roll, to minimizing having to open your PC, to minimizing having to look at your phone, through maybe that problem would be solved by automation. So that's also a consideration in your stack. And the other thing that struck me that you said, B, is that maybe you'd need to look at another backup provider. And, you know, I just caution people, or caution is the incorrect word, I just encourage people to take inventory of the time that it takes to, one, correctly look at another vendor. I mean, because, you know, if you're thinking about the switch, you also want to take into the mind time consideration the time and cost it takes to switch your vendor. So,
well, we talked about that, and I will gladly bring up the names. I mean, I use SolarWinds, you know, for my RMM, and I use them for my AV protection. I use them for my web protection. I do use them for some backup protection. Mm-hmm. And everybody is making the jump to Synchro because it's cheaper and it almost does what they need. When I looked at the switch, that almost was only a difference of $80, because after I considered, you know, moving the RMM, I still had to do my AV. I still had to do my web protection, the backup features and stuff. So I still had to add all that other stuff back into my stack. And for $80, that's not worth it for me.
Not to mention your stack might not be as integrated. So you might have more cost, time, and different data.
Right. I mean, I'm going to have to now go to different windows, different control panels. You know, the hope of the single pane of glass goes away, which, not that it's there now, but I can still do four of my core things from within SolarWinds for most of my clients.
And also keep in mind, there's more than that $80 a month. There's the cost and time of you having to learn a new product, mm-hmm. to master another solution, you know, finding out how its support channels work, and maybe even discovering how it works on your endpoints, the problems it may cause, the memory resources it takes.
Right.
So there's a lot there, more than $80. Right. So even if there was a $300-$400 saving, you know, there's still a lot of variables you have to take into consideration before you say, hey, it's going to save me all this money.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't want to look at it just from a money standpoint.
Right.
And, you know, and listen, I'm mentioning those products by name, not to say how good or how bad they are, because I don't know. And from the standpoint, we talked about it with all the other things, they may be great products for half of the community. You know, they may be a great product for me, but am I willing to make the switch if it doesn't gain me anything? So that's kind of my thoughts there. But I know that these things are coming. I know that the industry is changing. I know that there will be another merger acquisition that will affect me.
Tomorrow.
Yes. So that's one of the reasons I mentioned I need to be aware of what else is out there, at least to the point that if something happens to one of my products, one of my vendors, I need to be able to make a switch fast. And if I've got to switch 195 users, you know, in 72 hours, I better have a plan of action.
That's right. You better have a tool to be able to automate that.
Yes.
So you don't have to manually do all that. Absolutely.
Now, do you guys have an opinion on whether or not it makes sense when if that's your concern, what's the likelihood of a vendor getting bought, selling out, or closing their doors?
Very high.
Does that preclude you from saying, well, I like, for example, I like this a small vendor, they have an awesome product, and it meets everything. Okay, let's say it meets everything I need, but you may be hesitant because they're small. And they might disappear.
Well, there's some great examples of that. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, Open Mesh would be one. Data gobbled up Open Mesh, wireless networking. Usually what I see happen in that category, and there's a good SolarWinds example. SolarWinds has bought everything.
Yes.
But SolarWinds bought Passport. So usually what I see happen when that purchase happens is the shift turns very slowly. So Data didn't really do anything with Open Mesh at the beginning, but over time, things changed. It's sort of a trickle. Like you can't just buy new open mesh access points. You can, but not really legitimately to put into your open mesh
Correct.
Control panel.
Right.
You know, you have to go through Datto to do it quote unquote correctly. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with Passportal. I don't know how many guys use Passportal now that it's been absorbed by SolarWinds or the other products they buy. But it usually isn't this lightning strike of all of a sudden, okay, you can no longer use open mesh because Datto bought it. I haven't heard recently, maybe you guys can correct me, of anybody that's been extremely popular that's just disappeared.
Well, I don't know that. Let's go back 2 years, Monkeybox.
Oh, that's true.
When they got bought.
Yep.
And it wasn't something where they just simply got acquired and we could keep using it. There was literally a end of life where IT Glue said, you need to move to our product or go somewhere else. It's pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
So that was an example where I liked Monkeybox.
I did too.
And it did exactly what I needed. Now, IT Glue obviously has more bells and whistles, and it has a nice dashboard, but I don't use 70% of it.
Yeah, I miss the monkey box. That's why, exactly why I don't use IT fluid. That's too much for what I need.
Right. But to go back to your question about the fear of going with somebody because they're small, I think that can be said more today than in years past, because companies could last for a very long time being small. I think in today's world, I would have a little trepidation, because if they're good, somebody's going to come after them.
The one caveat, or the one really big fear I would have, consideration on your comment, Mike, would be is if I was using a hardware vendor that was 100% reliant on the cloud backend, meaning if I was using a networking product that did not work, if the vendor's cloud backend did not work, that would give me the one little bit of fear of using that product, meaning if they close down that cloud, they go out of business, somebody buys them and determines they don't want to be in that business. Now I have this equipment that I need to replace for my client, or it's just going to stop working. A great example would be the Arachnus gear. It has an overseer product that allows us to manage that gear, but it does not rely on that gear to function. So if overseer went away, I wouldn't have my remote management from a cloud console, but all my gear is still going to work. Still good switching equipment, still good hardware, but the product just doesn't stop working.
Right. Yeah.
So
either of you guys used Meraki? The Wi-Fi stuff?
I used Meraki before Cisco bought them.
Okay. Because that was one reason I stayed away from them, not because of their cloud management, but because the subscription base.
Yeah.
Literally, if you did not pay your subscription, it would stop working. And that was a fear that I didn't want to have my customers rely on that subscription. Now, of course, just about everything is going subscription now, which is a problem. Although Datto, I don't, you know, disclaimer here, I use Datto's backup. I don't use Datto for anything else. Even though I was a big open mesh champion, I have not switched over to the Datto network. I still have some open mesh that I have in reserve. So my existing customers, when we need to add them, I can still add them without having to make the change. So probably within the next year, I'm going to have to make that decision. And I'm hoping at some point I will go and evaluate the Datto networking side. I don't use any of their networking, their switches. I did try their router one time. Didn't like it.
Is that a full UPM?
It is not. No, I put that. So if we're ranking, and folks, listen, do not take my rankings as official. But if I had to rank them, I would rank them actually below the Arachnus.
Really? Okay.
And probably on the same tier as an Untangle. That's my guess. I mean, that's where I'm putting them. So I don't put them in the same category as a SonicWall or a WatchGuard or a Sophos. At least not yet.
Yeah, I get to your Meraki question. No, I don't use Meraki. Okay. I don't have a background with it. But Datto, I receive mixed messages from Datto because they have their world-class EDR. And with world-class pricing to go with it.
Of course.
And now, since then, and they fly their flag, and you have that, you see that flag fly.
Everywhere.
And you have that, and you expect that experience from their BDR. But now they've introduced, now they've been introducing networking products and APs solutions. And, do they still have, Is that flag still flying to imply this world-class support and quality? And I'm unsure. And now they've released a cloud, an affordable, budget-minded, cloud-based endpoint.
Yes.
Backup imaging.
Their SaaS, their SaaS protection.
Yeah, and it's I receive this messaging as mixed messaging in terms of, what is their brand now? If it's Datto, is it best in class, world class pricing, or now are they trying to be many things to many people?
Well, the merger with Autotask is another prime example. And now where does that put them in the category as, I don't even know how to describe it, because that instantly turned them into a behemoth in the industry. And you're right. I use Datto. I'm not going to say that I have allegiance to Datto, but I do get worried that doing all of these other things takes away from what made them great. A great backup product with great support. And the pricing was decent. When they started raising their prices, I was a little upset because they weren't just like little increases. Some of these were big increases. A couple of my customers literally doubled the price of their monthly cloud backup. And they changed the way that when their products are out of support, if you do it at the right time with some of their products, you can actually get an upgrade price. And the hardware is almost free, which my customers love that. But the other products, when it's done, no, sorry, full price for a new product. And oh, by the way, your monthly goes up. Customers are like, well, will our existing backup stop working? No, all right, we'll just stay with that. But now I have a hardware that I don't have support for, that I've got a plan. I've got to have a backup plan for my backup plan.
Well, the great thing is, if I'm not mistaken, Datto is partnered with Tekton. So if you're interested in giving them these questions asked, they're definitely going to be there with the networking gear. Is the rumor?
Well, yeah, I was treating that as a rumor.
Okay.
So, yes, the rumor is that Datto is close to signing the paper.
Okay.
To be at Tekton. We haven't officially announced it because, listen, I'm not the man who gets the signed paper, so I don't know, but we have been talking about it.
And we're waiting for somebody to sing, so maybe I'm starting a rumor that I should. So I will retract my comments.
But yeah, that was because I was actually going to say that. That was actually one of the things I was looking forward to. If they are there, I want to see their networking gear up close and personal. And I want to see how it stacks up against Arrakis.
It would be nice to have a discussion about some of the topics we just talked, you know, price increases, integration, maybe some fusion in the backup line. You know, because there's no doubt that the backup BDR products, the original stuff that we've been talking about, is fantastic because tons of people use it. But, you know, the questions you bring, like, those are questions that are good ones to ask.
Yeah.
And I'll also roll back just in case nobody really knows the difference. We've been talking about routers, firewalls, and UTMs and all that kind of stuff. So for those that don't know, the primary difference, and, you know, I'm going to call it a router, but the primary difference between a router that has a firewall in it runs something called SPI or stateful packet inspection that is 20 years old.
It's old, yeah.
Okay. So when you slap on a UTM, you're adding really three things. Deep packet inspection, which includes stuff like DPI, which would include like gateway AV, SSL inspection, all these other technologies of traffic coming into your network.
Intrusion prevention.
Yep. Anything coming into your network, a much deeper inspection of those packets and the packets leaving. So outgoing filtering is what a UTM will get to as well. Plus logging. Those are the three primary things that a UTM gets you. And I've simplified that explanation. But
you have.
Between a dumb firewall router that is a firewall, you know, the UTM adds on those features. Right. So those are the primary three things in simplest form that a UTM gets.
And much more granular control over things like the port forwarding, what's, you know, allowed, what's denied. There's a lot more features, but you're right. Those are probably the basics.
Yeah. Anything that's coming in that you can inspect more, that's that DPI. You know, you can port forward in a standard firewall router, but you can't control outgoing.
Right.
So
nothing really inspects that traffic.
That's right. So, and there's no real log of any of that traffic in or out either.
Yep.
What else you got for us, baby?
I don't know, but if I start getting emails on, he called it a router.
Send those emails to you.
So, all right. Wow, we got geeky there for a while.
Should we talk about Star Wars since we're by Star Wars land?
Yes, we were by there, and I did not take a picture standing next to it, but I do know that the Star Wars exhibit is open.
We'll save that for Rainey.
And
not Rainey. He's Star Trek, isn't he?
Yes. No, Rainey's both.
Rainey's both.
Okay. You're talking about Bradford Torrey.
BT.
Yes. Bradford, not Bradley.
Bradley's the lawyer.
Bradley Gross, yes. Wow, you do listen to the show. Okay. All right, guys. Well, actually, rather than just, you know, throw another question out there, let me just ask you if you have anything else that you want to share, maybe from this weekend, maybe something that's come up in the last week that business related you want to ask, or as John was prepping for this afternoon's live show, any, you know, tips or stories you'd like to share?
No, I just hope everybody else, you know, I'm blessed right now to be extremely busy. So I hope everybody else is the same. And I'm really looking forward to TechCon. Just to, you know, I've gotten here with three other guys, and just really having some great conversations. So I'm looking forward to taking that Make to the Next Level in September so we can include some vendors in those conversations too.
All right. Mike?
You know, I haven't been to Orlando since I was 10. And then,
did you really want to throw that out there?
Yeah. And back then, going to Disney World was an experience. You go into the park, and then it's like, that's now the magic's happening. How much has changed now? Where we were?
I mean, we felt the magic on in the airport.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm like, because nowadays, you know, what's it called? The experience is now far beyond the park with Disney. But it's still like the Disney property. But you're not paying the admission, rides.
Well, you're paying something.
Yeah.
Well, everything down here costs a little bit of money, but yeah.
Because especially you from out of state, because we're charging you extra.
That's true.
The tourist tax is alive and well. But yes, to your point, Disney is expanding. I think one of the little known secrets is that Disney owns a lot of this property already that has not been built on. So they have room to expand. And it is, you know, everybody thinks of Disney as Orlando. Disney's bigger, folks.
Like land-wise.
Yes, it is massive. And it probably has a infrastructure that rivals major cities.
If you do a little YouTubing, you can find actually there's a park or two that are actually closed down within the Disney proper.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they've got two parks they could rebuild, reopen, crush, redo, plus a lot of length.
Yes. And actually, the property we're on is an extension of Disney, you know, with the vacation clubs that they've now done. And you can come and have, you know, pretty much resort style living while you're here visiting Disney. So don't know how we got to basically do a commercial for Disney.
It's been my experience coming in here. The magic is
everywhere. Okay.
I hope I get a referral if he's
actually
Yeah. All right. Thanks, B, for taking
All right, guys. Thank you for that. I know it's time for you to get by the pool and get your tan working. And Mike, good to see you. And ladies and gentlemen, I am going to end off the show here. And that's about it. Until next time, holla.